Good evening and welcome to our teleseminar, The Super Traits of Personality. This is part three of this teleseminar. So parts one and two, along with this one, are going to be combined into a link and then put up on the Institute Facebook page and also in the Living Recovery group Facebook page. And you will have all three of them together in case you have missed one of the parts. So, good evening. Glad you're here. I'm Sandra Brown with the Institute. So, we are going to try to pick up where we left off. Hold one second. I'm going to try to mute the entering and exiting beeps that keeps happening. Hold one sec. Okay, good. So we have been talking about this issue about super traits, and which is a very different view of targeting and sort of understanding how and why you were targeted. And so we've been talking about the issue about personality and what we found through the Purdue research that indicated that there were personality traits just past the sweet spot on the bell curve. And we had discussed that those two traits were the trait of agreeableness. You can listen to part one to find out what those facets are. And the second personality trait was the trait of conscientiousness. And you can listen to part two for more details on that. This information, of course, is also in the third edition of the Women Who Love Psychopaths book. So those two earlier seminars were sort of laying the groundwork for understanding the personality trait elevations and to enter in now into this conversation about some of the labels that family, friends, survivor bloggers, other therapists have made sort of assumptions about your personality. And in the book, I talk about some of those assumptions. And the biggest one has been the issue in the label of codependency. And so we're going to kind of dive into that tonight. This issue of this label of codependency is also in the book in much more detail than probably what we will get into tonight. So the label codependency, it's not that it's never applicable to survivors of pathological love relationships. There are some circumstances in which that label, you know, might be appropriate. When we were doing the Purdue research, we tested over 600 survivors, and that's actually considered to be a big sampling. And within that testing and assessment, it looked at whether or not your personality traits and elevations were in the category or the end of the spectrum where we would suspect codependency or even dependency. So because we had heard that so often discussed as codependents and narcissists and codependents and psychopaths, we wanted to, find the answers to that as well. And so there were a number of things that pointed to codependency not being the primary reason or label or explanation for your trait targeting within the relationship. So there were a number of things that, like I said, that we were looking for. And codependency, first of all, is not a clinical diagnosis. It has been around since the 80s. It was made popular by Melody Beatty in her book, Codependent No More. But it is not a clinical diagnosis. It is not in the DSM. It's pop psychology. The issues of codependency, it's this really broad-based list of characteristics that, quite frankly, almost anyone could fall under a number of those traits. But the history of codependency is very much tied to the dysfunctional family. So if you had early childhood abuse, any type of aversive childhood, alcoholic parents, addict parents, pathological parents, abuse, neglect, raised in extreme poverty, those kinds of aversive childhoods could predispose survivors to codependency. The interesting thing is that in the research, 60-some percent of the survivors who participated in the research indicated that they came from normal enough homes. And so the codependency label that's very much connected to the dysfunctional family kind of history was not present in 60-some percent of the survivors. And so if it's not that, what was it? And that's when we really started digging into personality to find the trait elevation, because codependency is based on external factors like abuse and neglect. So it's also based very much on nurture theory, that codependency is a set of learned behavior, learned responses generated from these aversive childhoods or dysfunctional families. So if it is codependency and it's learned behavior, it can be unlearned. But as we have talked about, the super traits, is that the issue of personality, just like with your former personality disordered partner, is that your personality, my personality, his personality is pretty innate, and it's our tendencies or our proclivities. And so it's why understanding your own personality with these trait elevations is so important, because you take your personality into the next relationship. There needs to be an acute level of awareness of how these traits operate, because they need supervision, if you will, in these relationships. You cannot unlearn your personality. Neither could your narcissist or psychopath. And that's why you left, because they could not undo or unlearn their personality. And these traits, the super traits, are trait elevations, and I want to be really specific again that this did not fall into the category of a personality disorder for you guys, for the survivors. It was just kind of two steps over from the bell curve, or the sweet spot in the bell curve. So this idea of codependency may be applicable to 30-some percent of survivors of pathological relationships that have had aversive childhoods. And just because you may have had an aversive childhood does not mean automatically that you are codependent. And I think therapists have jumped to those kinds of conclusions when they hear an aversive childhood history, and automatically assume that, you know, alcoholic parents or dysfunctional family systems has produced codependency in someone. So just because you have an aversive history, you may or may not find yourself falling into these traits of codependency. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the traits of codependency, and we're going to compare them, compare and contrast them to the super traits. me find it out here. All right, so according to Melody Beatty, Codependence Anonymous states, that the characteristics are caretaking, low self-worth, repression of feeling, obsessing over things, attempting to control, denial, dependency, poor communication, weak personal boundaries, lack of trust of self and others, anger, and sexual problems. So, to compare this to the agreeableness and conscientiousness super traits, as I go through and compare and contrast, sort of make a mental checklist in your mind of which side of this equation fits for you. So codependency has the traits of what Melody Beatty called caretaking and dependent. But the agreeableness trait indicates that instead of being caretaking and dependent, that you are reciprocal in relationships, which means you give in return. You know, being very, of course, relationship invested. That's very different, having a reciprocal kind of relationship does not match the traits and codependency of caretaking and dependency. Codependency says that codependents attempt to control. Agreeableness, super trait, says, no, how you guys tested is that you are willing to help without desire for selfish domination, and that you have a concern for social harmony. That's very different than the trait of codependency of attempting to control. The agreeableness trait says you willingly help. You're not trying to control anything and continue to try to help without a desire for selfish domination. And because you are so relationship-oriented and value social harmony in your relationships, you work towards reducing the problems in the relationship. But that does not mean that it is being generated out of codependency and attempting to control. Codependency says that codependents have poor communication and a repression of their feelings. But agreeableness, super traits, and how you guys tested is you tested as straightforward and upfront. You did not have poor communication. You did not repress your feelings. You were, tend to be very verbal and honest. If you ask you, a question, you're going to answer it. Codependence, on the other hand, tend to repress their feelings. Of course, later in the pathological relationship, after the mask slips, and you begin to see what's really underneath there and that it's not safe to communicate, your communication patterns change out of survival. So, but your core personality, and that's what the research with Purdue tests at, that core personality that doesn't change a lot. It might situationally change in the pathological relationship, but at your core, you are straightforward and upfront. Codependents have a lack of trust of themselves and others, and the agreeable super trait for you guys said that you are trusting and trustworthy. Again, later in the pathological relationship, you will become distrustful as the mask slips, but at your core, when not in a pathological or aversive situation, you are trusting and trustworthy. Codependency says codependents have a lot of anger, and super traits has found, tested and found that you aren't angry at your core, that you are well tempered and gentle at your core. Did your temper change after the mask slipped? Yes, but it was situational. Outside of pathological relationships or aversive conditions, that your core personality is well-tempered and gentle. Codependency says that codependents have unmoderated feelings, which tend to be intense and vacillate back and forth. But the super traits, the agreeableness super trait that we found in you guys, says that at your core, you are tolerant, not having unmoderated feelings that that are all over the place. After the mask slipped, did your feelings become unmoderated and vacillating? Absolutely yes, because most of you had trauma, and trauma, that's what trauma does. It emotionally dysregulates you. But at your core, outside of a pathological or an aversive conditioned environment, you are tolerant. Codependency says that codependents are people-pleasing. And all of codependency, all of it, the whole theory, if you can even call pop psychology a theory, is based on this issue of low self-esteem. So every one of these traits that I have been reading tonight about codependency generates out of this low self-esteem. So, excuse me. So in the research, and in part of the instruments, you know, that we used in testing you guys is, again, goes to the core personality. Did you have low self-esteem by the end of the relationship? Of course you did. It goes with trauma. It goes with everything that you had lived through. But it was situational. At your core, that could be tested. You did not test with low self-esteem. In fact, you guys tested with pretty healthy self-confidence and self-esteem. And that's what has aided you in your recovery, are these super traits. And that at your core, underneath all what feels like it's broken and screwed up, at your core, at one time, you had a good, healthy self-concept. So I can always tell sort of the difference with survivors who are super traded and survivors who really are codependent. I mean, that label much more fits their situation. And the survivors with super traits have an easier time in recovery. Not that this type of recovery is easy at all. But codependence, true codependence, you know, struggle a lot more in recovery, and they need work on other levels about family dynamics and that kind of stuff than people with super traits. Codependencies, some of these are repeating. We're talking about codependency versus the second. And so codependency says that everything about codependency is generated, you know, out of low self-esteem and motivated by this attempt to control other people. But the super trait of conscientiousness at your core says you don't attempt to control others, that at your core you are thoughtful to others. Codependency says you are prone to poor communication, but super trait conscientiousness says no, at your core you are very purposeful and have goal-directed behavior, which you would not have if you had poor communication that's seen in codependency. But that's not how you tested. You tested high in purposefulness and goal-directed behavior. Codependency says, again, anger and unmoderated or vacillating feelings, and yet in this super trait of conscientiousness at your core, no, that's not what you had. You tested having highly controlled impulses. In fact, this trait of conscientiousness bit you in the butt because you are not impulsive enough, that when the mask slipped, you did not cut and run on the first red flag, or probably the 50th red flag, or the 100th red flag. And people who are highly impulsive, like your former partner, are in and out of relationships, either in affairs or really leaving the relationship because they are impulsive. So while codependency says that your emotions and feelings are all over the place. Super Trait says, nope, that at your core, before the pathological relationship caused emotional dysregulation, at your core, you have controlled impulses. Codependency says, low self-esteem that we talked about before, the super trait of conscientiousness said, nope, you guys tested as in a healthy range of self-acceptance at your core before the pathological relationship. In your innate personality. Codependency says that codependents can't meet their own needs. And the super trait of conscientiousness said, nope, that's not true about you. You guys tested to be highly resourceful and highly persevering. And someone who can't meet their own needs is not resourceful and is not persevering in their ability, to meet their own needs. And so there's not much at all that lines up with super traits and codependency. And if you found yourself, in that codependency symptoms, that's okay. For your own recovery, you need to understand what's going on. Is it truly codependency? And then you need to go and work on some of that along with your pathological love relationship recovery as well. If you don't find yourself in that codependency list, you need to know that too. Especially if you haven't hooked in to a therapist yet, because she's going to listen to those relationship dynamics and see some of your personality at play, in the session, and she's going to leap to that assumption that it's codependency, because until our research, we didn't have another understanding of these traits. So, so if, for instance, the therapist sees the trait, the facet in the trait of agreeableness of tolerance, she's likely to think that that is people-pleasing. So understanding that whether you really the area of codependency or if super traits is a better understanding of how you're wired, then you need to know that so that you can get in counseling. All right, so I'm going to, I'm reading from these tables and charts out of the third edition of Women Who Love Psychopaths. And there is a table that compares survivor codependency-like symptoms generated from pathological relationships. So, for instance, on the surface, yes, a therapist could look at something and think that it was codependency-like for low self-esteem, that currently, when you were showing up, you know, for counseling, your self-esteem right now, situationally, is low self-esteem. But the therapist may not understand that was being generated and produced from devaluing, discarding, infidelity, blaming, pathological lying. All of that can impact, you know, from the pathological relationship, can impact you and does impact you in your self-esteem. But that doesn't mean that you have had a chronic history of low self-esteem. In codependency, you would have a chronic history of low self-esteem. She might see some codependency symptom-like traits of poor functional boundaries and not understand that at that moment when she's seeing you in counseling, that you didn't have poor functional boundaries as a chronic history all the way back. That you have current functional boundary issues that were produced from threats, coercion, manipulation, violence, and gaslighting. So in this table, I take each one of the codependency symptoms, and then I explain why a therapist could be seeing them now, and what they were produced from in the relational dynamics of the pathological relationship. And a lot of it was also generated out of cognitive dissonance and trauma. And so it's worth giving another look at this chart if you're still trying to determine whether you feel codependency is the right label or if super traits is the right label. And you also might want to review that chart if you're therapist shopping. So it goes over, it's 2 pages long, so we don't have time tonight to read all of that, but it's all in there. And so everything that quacks like a duck doesn't mean it's a duck. Other things quack. But when people look at these super traits of agreeableness and conscientiousness, and they see tolerance, and they see empathy, and they see your levels of trust and your resourcefulness, they can automatically assume that that is connected to dependency, codependency, when it isn't. So doing these teleseminars over the last times that we have done them, has been at an attempt to do a couple things. One is accurate pathology education, because according to survivor bloggers or other people writing about this, there is an assumption that this is all just codependency. But the only research that's out there about this, which is ours, indicates that's true in 30-some percent. So 60-some percent of the people that they are labeling codependent and writing to are not. So one was to set the record straight. One of the reasons of doing this was to set the record straight with real research, not with guessing and pop psychology and survivors trying to act like therapists, but with real science. And that's what I like to use. I like to use real science. So this was about teaching accurate pathology education. And also for a much deeper understanding about the super traits. The book goes into a lot, several chapters on it. But there's just something different about chit-chatting in these kinds of seminars that helps to bring it all home in understanding the super traits, because you can't guard what you don't understand. And the thing that we know about personality is that what we have is what we have, and that you guys have some risks that other people who don't have these super traits don't have. It's why, for instance, in our living recovery program, especially in the advanced group, when we start working at getting ready to maybe date again, where we have to dissect and dig really deep on these super traits, because whether you're dating or not, your personality goes with you to work if you have a pathological boss or friend or family member. And if you don't understand how you're wired, you can't protect yourself. And so these teleseminars, was for a deeper look into super traits so that you have a better understanding of that. Even from a prevention standpoint. And for those of you, like I said before, who might be therapist shopping, if you don't find yourself in the codependency category, buy the book, insist they read it before they begin treatment, and don't accept the label if it's not applicable. For those that it is, now you have a clearer understanding of what you should be also working on in therapy. So I'm going to unmute. Let's see. If you have questions, you can hit *6. Nope, actually, you can't. I'm going to have to unmute you. So hold 1 second, and then I'm going to take questions. So everybody's unmuted. Does anybody have any questions?
Sandra, this is Kathy. I had asked something in the Facebook group, and you said bring it up in this session. I'm a very independent, not doormat person at all, but when I was dealing with a narcissist, I became the most passive, cooperative, didn't speak up, put up with anything person. It was unbelievable to me how quickly I shifted into that mode. And you said to bring this up, so I am right now.
Yeah. So I think probably every survivor on here would say that the coercive control of, you know, a pathological partner changed how they normally acted previously or in other healthy environments. And so if you didn't go through a big change, you probably weren't in a pathological relationship. You might have had a bad breakup, but it probably, you know, wasn't the real deal. So it definitely how you describe yourself as being a very independent person is exactly what the research shows. And the vast majority of you guys, that you are, you know, strong, upfront, independent people. So a situational reaction is normal. And, you know, pathology affects everyone. It's worse in intimate relationships, but, you know, we got to respect the horrible power that pathology has to wreck people and completely, you know, change them from trauma, you know, at the time. And but it affects, you know, people that aren't in intimate relationships. If their boss is pathological or a friend or family member, but that's just the strength of pathology. And that we can be, you know, situationally changed for survival. And with treatment and trauma treatment, that our personality returns to what it was or more similar to that, depending on your trauma treatment outcomes. So thanks for bringing that up. Glad you remembered.
That's huge. I really appreciate your answer because, I mean, that's huge to lead people to think, oh, well, I must be codependent because of that shift into that behavior that meets a lot of that list. But that's very, mm-hmm. very great to understand it's just situationally caused.
Well, in the chapter where I talk about codependency in the book, I have a long list at the end of that chapter that says, you know, just because someone had a situational reaction. I mean, you know, granted, it might have been 20 years in the relationship, but they did not have a historical dependency.
Right.
Right. They had a situational reaction, and that's
right.
Very different and does not, you know, that is not codependency.
Well, great. Thank you so much for that. I really make, that's huge. Thank you.
You're welcome. Do we have any other?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sure. Go ahead.
I don't have a question. I just want to say thank you. You used the wording I needed. My person used to say literally, at your core, you're this. At your core, you're unstable. At your core, you're insecure. And when you repeated that with our super traits, wow, that was so helpful. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah, that's huge. And the I had a really terrible childhood, but I didn't behave, well, like, you know, I think she said her name was Kathy just said, I didn't behave in that way, that door
right.
in that way, anyone, until this particular person.
Right. So you did not have, you know, just because you had an aversive childhood doesn't mean you'll be a codependent. But therapists want to jump to that. I had, you know, not a great childhood. And I'm about as opposite of codependent as you can get. So just because you had an aversive childhood, that's what, you know, aspects of resiliency that they're starting to measure, you know, in people and kids to understand why two people can go through the same kind of situation and come out very differently.
Yeah. That was so helpful, I think, for a lot of people that we did change, and it was situational, and you try to explain to others, yeah, but I'm behaving this way because of how I'm, these interactions with this person. I don't usually roll this way.
Right, right.
Yeah, they find it so hard to believe that someone, oh, you're so strong, so that's it's like a two-edged sword. You're so strong, and you're always so honest and blunt. Why is it that this person, then how can this yokel, my friend said, how does this yokel affect you? It's like they can't grasp it.
Right. And so many of those behaviors in these codependency charts that take the pathological relationship, the consideration of what trauma does to your behavior and your thinking, and what cognitive dissonance does to your behavior and thinking. And it compares, you know, what looks like a codependent-like, you know, situation, and then explains it through trauma, cognitive dissonance, and the pathological relationship. So so people on the surface, you know, might know you as a strong person and then notice all the behavior changes that you don't act as strong as you used to. Well, guess what? That's what trauma does.
Yeah.
That's what cognitive dissonance does. It scrambles your brain. And,
yeah.
And so a lot of that, you know, people don't understand that. So I think the charts will be helpful to go back over.
Yeah, that was wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Do we have any other?
Yeah, Sandra, Terry.
Yeah.
Terry here. Not a question. I just wanted to thank you, just like the last person did. I read the second edition book twice. I read the third edition book once, and I went through four different highlighters reading it. I'm 17 weeks into the Living Recovery program, but I wanted to say thanks just for the calls, because the calls make it real. You know, the recovery, these calls really reinforce the recovery in a way that just reading those books on your own,
yeah,
or that material.
I know it. It's
just,
true.
It just does too. So I just, because these calls help me significantly. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
You are welcome. And I know that we included in the Living Recovery program links to some of the blog talk radio shows we did. But for anybody that's not in our Living Recovery program, if you go to Blog Talk Radio and go to Relational Harm Reduction Radio, we've got 20 or 30 radio shows. And so there's a lot of information, you know, in that as well as, the teleseminar kind of things we were doing. So check there as well. Okay.
Thank you, Sandra.
You Thanks. Are welcome.
It's so reassuring.
Hi. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to say that was a lot of positive reinforcement. I mean, for me, that to hear the voice and hear your voice, that was
Right. Awesome. Well, we are at the bewitching hour, so I want to thank everybody for dropping by for this teleseminar. All three parts of this teleseminar are going to be put on one link. It'll probably take a couple days for the tech person to do that. And then I will put it in our Facebook groups, our Facebook page, et cetera, so that you can, re-listen if you need to. So thank you for joining us tonight. This has been Sandra Brown with the Institute. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night. That was great.
Thank you.
Thank you.